Did you guys put your orders in with our server here? I know True Love loves a good grilled oriental chicken salad here from Applebee's.
You have the menu pulled up in front of you?
Nope, this is all from memory, and I know Brian in particular loves a good Tex-Mex shrimp arista bowl. So,
no, what the fuck is
irresistible, excuse me, sorry.
No, you got me all wrong, Rob. I'm not a shellfish guy.
I'm the shrimp gal. I'm big on shrimp.
Maybe I got them backwards.
Big shrimp.
But we all love the Brewpub pretzel and beer cheese dip, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody loves that.
Liquid cheese always works.
Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, it was our fault. We made a mistake. Spider said it was clear. I wasn't clear, and, you know, I didn't want to tear my car up, tear his car up either. I respect everybody, and I demand respect. And, you know, I apologized to the guy when he came over the car, explained to him what happened, and then he took it to another level when he started calling me an idiot and whatever else. And I don't appreciate that. I'm not going to take it. I told him how I feel. I called him out. He didn't show. You know, and so, you know, I'm good with it if he's good with it, but I'm not going to be disrespected by no means.
Yeah, I guess I had a dinner date at Applebee's last night that I didn't find out until it was too late. It's a shame. We love their riblets and boneless wings, but...
All right, folks. Welcome to Meet Me at Applebee's, your shop-at-home motorsports collectibles podcast. I am Brian. With me, as always, are Rob and Ashley. Folks, how we doing on this lovely Tuesday afternoon?
Good, man. Not mm-hmm. too bad. How about you, True Love?
Yep.
I guess good and not too bad are good and not too bad are two different answers, but somewhere in between.
Well, I mean, good is not too bad. That is true. Yeah, so.
Could be worse. I'll say that.
Yes.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Well, those are all good things. Managed to survive a weekend with my family, and now I'm looking forward to two straight weekends of racing things. But we'll get to that. And there was a weekend of racing that happened. I guess that we can talk about.
Yeah, I know you weren't too thrilled about it, but there was some good shit that happened. There was some good things.
I mean, it wasn't awful.
Please tell us what those things were.
Yeah.
Well, you know the old. I don't know if you guys watched it. The Prairie Dirt Classic was fun as hell. Watching RTJ and Bobby Pierce go for it, and Ricky Thornton Jr. winning yet again, taking some more money home. I think it was like $50,000 to win or some shit. It was a controversial race, but got it done. I love RTJ, and people don't like Bobby Pierce, so I think everyone was pretty happy. So that was fun.
Bobby Pierce sounds like a dickhead name. Like, he sounds like a bully.
Some might agree with that. He's very aggressive, but... I don't have feelings either way, but yeah, congrats to RTJ bringing home some more money and stuffing it under his mattress or whatever they do with it.
Yeah, the only short track racing I saw this weekend was that clip of those guys that drove off into the woods.
Woo!
And
yeah.
Got into a fight in Alabama.
Like an episode of Cops there. Out there. Yeah. Was that Mobile, I think, is where it was?
It was.
Oh, man. Yeah, I sent that to a buddy of mine from down there. I was like, hey, I know those guys. I was like, fuck, of course you would.
Of course.
Yeah, they was off in the woods. We'll have to post a link to that because that was...
quality entertainment.
It was good, yeah. That was probably the fight of the year or the disturbance of the year, I'll say that.
Yeah. But, yeah. That's good. Yeah, it was definitely an entertaining clip. Unlike a lot of the other racing clips that we saw this weekend. Although, I don't know, I guess not so much in... Xfinity, but Richmond. I feel like the racing lived up to my predictions in both races at the track.
Well, I wouldn't say that, but
okay. Well, let's hear your disagreement here, Rob. What did it for you at Richmond this weekend?
I thought it was fine, honestly. I mean, obviously they're not all going to be barn burners, and I think people need to temper their expectations about what stock car racing is and what they're going to see, because it's the same shit you'd see with late models or anywhere else, you know. And
no,
NASCAR has unique issues with their car that they probably aren't going to be able to fix, and it kind of is what it is. And with that said, I thought the strategy was compelling, and the NBC booth did a good job of conveying what was going on. And I don't know, like, again, I'm not going to sit here and scream from the mountaintops and defend it like it was something great, but it was fine. Mm-hmm. And I very much enjoyed it. It was cool to see Roush kind of popped their head up. They're really good at whatever short track package we have. It's the second time Chris Buescher's been able to go out there and whoop some ass, so I was happy to see that.
I mean, you're not wrong. I will say this race was definitely, I'm trying to think how to word this. if you're trying to be nice, this was like the racer's race, I guess, because again, it wasn't the most, as far as on track
action. That's how Pocono used to be, right?
Yes, that is fair.
That's what Pocono was, and then El Pocono is what Richmond was for somehow. So
yeah, I don't know how that
this
works.
Is all a simulation. 2012, we all died, and here we are. So
for as much as it sounds like I'm complaining, it wasn't that bad of a race. Like again, I'm enough of a nerd now to understand these strategy races, and you know, it's not like there wasn't any action or any passing at all day. You know, I like Chris Buescher. I like Keselowski, and I like what RFK has been doing this year. I forget who. I don't know if somebody said it on MRN or on the broadcast, but you know, RFK definitely has a strategy that a lot of other teams aren't employing, whereas it seems like they're definitely, their setups are almost identical, and they run together, and they either succeed together or fail together, and that's until true. Brad had his shitty pit stop, he was having a pretty good race along with Chris.
Oh, it was his race. There's no question about it.
So, you know, it wasn't that bad. I think it would have... you know, who knows, might have been a little bit better under the lights. Still weird to me to see the cup cars back running two races during the daytime.
Yeah, as a fan, I said this last week, I don't really want to, I don't have as much interest in going and sitting in 100 degree heat and metal grandstands for a strategy race, you know. Now Saturday night, let's fucking go. Like, I love Richmond, and I love Richmond at night, but during the day, I feel kind of bad for the fans who were probably too disoriented from heat exhaustion and to really be able to grasp the strategy that was going on there. But I don't know. What'd you think, True Love?
It was fine. It was a race that happened. You know, it followed Pocono that had like headline after headline after headline come out of that race. And it was, you know.
Larson did get a little chippy with Denny, which I enjoyed very much.
He got one little baby chip in, yeah.
Yeah, the appetizer was served.
I do hope there's a full course coming later. But
yeah. Well, Denny, I know, bought some... he said it wasn't even for his birthday. It was just to be nice. He bought some gifts from Jordan's golf course to Larson, because I guess they went golfing there over the weekend, so maybe a little bit of a olive branch being extended, but we'll see. I don't know. I definitely still hope Larson.
How the fuck does that serve me as a fan, huh? Huh?
Fair point, Rob.
Nike polo? Fuck out of here with that. Firewall deep into the fence. That's what I want.
Well, we can dream. Amen. We'll see. But I will say, I mean, the cup cars are one thing. We all kind of know what's going on with the short track package and all that shit. But I don't really think the trucks were all that exciting either. Maybe even a little less exciting than the cup cars, just because there was a little less strategy involved there. And especially after the shit show they had to follow up in the afternoon at Road America. It was tough to get through that race.
I'll be honest, I really didn't watch a whole lot of the truck race. Much like the video of the week, I kind of fell asleep during a good chunk of it.
Same. I dozed off a little, too.
And then I was like, I'm going to flip over to Flo and see what's going on. So I didn't see Carson Hocevar win. By the way, if you haven't listened to his interview on DBC, he's a good guest. It was pretty cool to have him on there. And he's a funny guy. So I've definitely like warmed up to him quite a bit since earlier in the year. But anyway,
I woke up to Hocevar dropping the F-bomb in his victory lane speech. I was like, oh.
Yeah, that was cool. Always in a swearing.
Yeah, I love a good F-bomb in victory lane. But I didn't see much of it, so I can't really speak on it. I really hated the Xfinity race.
Wasn't good.
I just don't like Cup at Road or NASCAR at Road America. I just don't think it suits the series. It's just like the laps are too long, like the amount of time it took to wrap that race up, and like, let's be honest, if we're gonna go racing on like a fucking 4 mile road course, you gotta figure out how to do local yellows.
Yeah, that
if you
dragged
can't
that
do
race
that
out.
Yeah. I feel like the last five laps took like an hour. It was fucking nuts.
Yeah, it was bad.
I just don't care. It doesn't look cool to me. I know a lot of fans up there love that, and a lot of people will probably disagree with me, and, you know, whatever. Like, if we're going to go road racing, you know, that is a cool facility, but, man, they really they got to figure out local yellows if they're going to do that, because we can't be having like 45 minutes of fucking riding around behind the pace car. Like, it's ridiculous.
I think they were stalling so they could ship in more fucking Speedy Dry to clean up those gigantic oil spills that they...
Yeah, who dropped oil like halfway around the track?
I feel like it was John Hunter, but I could be making that up.
Yeah. I think there's another one.
Yeah. I also want to give a shout out to Chandler Smith for just like trying to kill himself on the on the wall there when he lost his brakes. Very heads up move there, but yeah.
Yeah. I guess maybe he didn't get the memo that that wall was pure concrete.
Yeah, I don't know. That was pretty violent. So if he's willing to do that, then I imagine the alternative would have been worse, but yeah, I just don't care.
Well, the alternative was JD McDuffie in 1991, so there was that.
Damn. It's always with the...
Always just making dark jokes. Yeah. Another dark joke.
A severe thunderstorm watch on this show. Yeah. Anytime Brian starts bringing up the road course references. Last week it was Rob Moroso killing somebody, and this week it's JD McDuffie. But yeah, I'm glad that didn't happen. But yeah, I guess he did the right thing. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I was happy to see Sam Mayer finally get his first win. So, yeah. Feels pretty overdue.
Yeah, all it took was NASCAR pausing the race for like 3 days.
I would have been excited if Sage won, personally. But I'm pretty indifferent with Sam Mayer. He's still a baby.
He doesn't do
anything for me.
Yeah, and Ty Gibbs kind of whooped his ass that one time, so that was funny. But
Ty didn't have his helmet off. I don't care.
I know it's a technicality, but still, you know. That another terrible race, which was Martinsville. Actually, that truck race is pretty good. It was just the Cup Series that year that was awful.
But, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, the Cup race was definitely my favorite out of the three big races. Again, lots of short track stuff happened. Unfortunately, NASCAR got rained out preemptively up at Claremont. Last week I said it was White Mountain, but you know, six of one, half dozen the other. They're at Claremont instead, up in New Hampshire, and then they weren't because of rain. Who knows if it actually rained or not, but they shut that down and have not announced a date yet, so I was denied modifieds, so I'm sad about that, but you know, it is what it is.
Bummer.
Yeah. But I do want to bring up a discussion we had amongst the three of us yesterday and today.
Can't wait.
I've been very much looking forward to hosting this sort of debate.
You just want us to fight is all you want.
Yes,
I feel like
absolutely.
The fight's already squashed.
Yeah,
zero interest in this conversation.
Well, it's gonna happen, and because it's a good topic, and I don't know, you guys can help me out on this. I don't know where this was said. It was Reddit, Twitter. I don't fucking know. But someone was making an argument that Chris Buescher is a better driver than Ross Chastain, I guess, is the sort of gist of the whole thing. And True Love, from what I gather, tends to agree with that statement. And Brian, of course, as a card-carrying member of the Pitbull fan club, disagrees. opening arguments from... We'll start with True Love over here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Apparently, I liked a tweet that I didn't even remember liking, and Brian brought it up in the group chat, and I had to literally go back to Twitter and look through my likes to figure out.
Well, that's how Twitter works. Twitter shows you things that your friends like, and that showed up in my feed.
I will never like anything again on Twitter ever again.
On X, excuse you.
No, it's not. It's Twitter.
It is Twitter.
Fuck that guy. So yeah, I mean. I don't. It's not really an argument. Personally, I like them both. I think they both have two very different driving styles, and their paths to where they've gotten in their career were very different. I think Ross has maybe accomplished a bit more in the Cup Series in a shorter amount of time than Chris has.
For sure.
But also, you know, Chris definitely is more accomplished in a less aggressive driver. But they're both. I mean, it's hard to say which one is better. I think they're both good, and they both have a lot more left to offer in their careers. Personally, I just like calling out Ashley's hate of Ross because I still think it's unfair.
To the rebuttal here from True Love here.
I don't care. I just really don't care about this.
Yep.
I mean, they're pretty, I mean, I'll agree they're pretty evenly matched. I just happen to hate one with a passion and,
The other,
but yeah, as far as like
about.
cup goes, yeah, they're pretty, you know.
I just think it's a really interesting comparison, you know, and I hadn't really considered the two of them sort of being on, I don't know, like an equal stage other than the Cup Series. But, you know, like, I never really considered the two of them as being comparable drivers because you forget about Chris Buescher being in the mix because he doesn't do anything. You know, he doesn't do anything that draws attention. He just kind of like grinds and gets his top tens and whatever. Then once in a while, pop up and get a win or a top five. Which, speaking of grinding, Ryan Preece getting a top five finish this week. So fuck everybody. That's what's up. Everyone loves to see that shit. But anyway,
so that's why Rob loved the race.
I mean, it certainly helped. It certainly helped. Yeah. But it's to me that's a comparison that honestly those guys are. Very much like the ones you should compare based on their career arcs and how they ended up here. And now they're starting to percolate through with, you know, somewhat newer teams. And I know Roush isn't a newer team, but, you know, Brad Keselowski's involvement is certainly a new element that has sort of stepped the operation up a bit.
Yeah. I think it was the iceberg that made a good comparison of Buescher to actually Truex, which I think when you actually look at their career arcs, it's pretty similar. You know, Truex was in – both Truex and Buescher had early success in the lower ranks, and then when they got to Cup, kind of floundered a bit and were in and out of shitty rides. And eventually, once they found the rides that worked for them the best, they started to succeed. And I think Buescher now, especially with RFK evolving how it has the last couple seasons, I think that team is only going to get stronger and stronger. And,
yeah,
you know, we'll see what happens with Brad. I feel like he is starting to, you know, his career is starting to end, but I think Buescher has still got plenty of time left. And I think, you know, we could see, you know, a Truex type run from him,
if he
gets
Brad?
Maybe a little more aggressive, but we'll see.
From Brad or from Chris?
For Chris.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I could see Brad having a resurgence as well. I think he's got a couple more wins left in him. I really do.
Oh, for sure.
And after seeing Richmond, you know, there's a lot of races like that on the calendar, and if they can figure it out like that a few more times, especially on the plate tracks, I feel like we're going to see Brad in victory lane with that big ass American flag that just populates out of nowhere. Again, we live in a simulation, so
I got a feeling this weekend they'll be strong again. So
you think so?
We'll see what happens. I wouldn't be mad to see either one of those guys win.
You got a big weekend in Michigan coming up, which is really, really cool. I'm excited to hear about that. But real quick, before we, unless you guys have any more thoughts about Richmond.
Nah.
True love, I'm going to put you on the spot here because you got to meet an absolute legend over the course of the weekend. And I know you mentioned it on Instagram today, but you got to meet Linda Vaughn. And I'd love to hear more about this. And if you guys don't know who Linda Vaughn is, I'll let you kind of handle that, True love. But she's an absolute legend in the racing world. And I love her. I really do, and I'm so jealous you got to meet her. So I don't know if you mind sharing your experience getting to meet her.
Sure, I'll try to put some words together. So Saturday, me and my brother drove like 2 hours to a car show in Dalton, Georgia, which is Linda's hometown, and she lives in California now. But I think she flies out every year to do this car show. But it's been a bucket list item of mine for a long time to meet her because she's just someone that's like, you know, a female. There aren't many females within the racing industry to really, idolize and whatnot. And, you know, she wasn't a driver, but she has been a part of racing history for, you know, the last 60 years.
The way she did it, too. You know, like, she commanded respect, which I think is incredible.
I mean, you know, she started off as a beauty pageant queen or whatever, but she was, you know, since she was a kid, a racing fan first and foremost. So she knew her shit and, you know, loved the sport. But, so anyway, she did autographs or whatever at the convention center that they have in Dalton, and went to meet her, I was very nervous because, you know, I'm very awkward in person, especially with new people. So,
you're not that bad. Come on.
Yeah. But I wore my favorite Tim Richmond shirt because I felt like that would be an icebreaker because her and Tim dated in the 80s. And
I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
No. Yeah. Yeah. They dated in the 80s. And so she saw my Tim Richmond shirt. And the second she saw that, she like just gave me a big, huge, warm hug. And she's just so like warm and welcoming and, you know, very sociable. You know, that's been her career, is talking to people for, you know, 60 years. But
yeah,
she told me, you know, how much she loved Tim and how special he was to her, and talked about him calling her on his deathbed the day before he died.
Oh my God.
To tell her how much he loved her. And that's when she started getting like teary eyed, and I was like, oh shit, I just met Linda Vaughn, I already made her cry. So fuck.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I guess I'm not
she
surprised.
She just kept talking about how handsome he was and all that. But she, you know, before Tim raced in NASCAR, he was in IndyCar first, and that's when she met him, was during his IndyCar days.
Yeah, Rookie of the Year in 1982, yeah. I believe.
Yeah, and she's, I guess he was in talks with driving for Penske at the time, and when she met him, she was like, you know, if you drive for Penske, you're gonna have to cut your hair, and he's like, well, I'm not cutting my hair, so he went and drove for AJ Foyt instead.
Yeah. So. Yeah, the story is he got in a couple of wrecks, and his mom convinced him to go over to NASCAR because there's a roof.
Yep.
So
find some walls around him.
Exactly.
But yeah, I guess they were, you know, friends for, you know, a decade after that or whatever, till he passed away. But yeah, she shared some stories with me about how close she was with Davey Allison. Like, he called her Aunt Linda, and a story about Dale Earnhardt that I probably shouldn't share, but yeah, should we just, you know, gabbed, two gals just gabbing about racing for a little while, and it was awesome. I mean, way more than I ever expected. Like,
I'm sure it was a nice reprieve for her, assuming who usually comes up to talk to her.
Yeah,
and again,
it was a long line of old men that wanted to kiss her. They kept asking for kisses. Yeah.
If you guys listening to this don't know who Linda Vaughn is, just Google her, or Miss Hurst Shifter. That works too. And you'll see why all these old motherfuckers are lining up for for a shot in their golden years.
Yeah.
Man, that's awesome. I'm so stoked you got to meet her.
Yeah,
she doesn't do too many appearances anymore, I don't think, right?
No, you know, she's 80 now, so, and she lives in California, so I think she still does, like, maybe one or two in Daytona a year, and just, like, a couple big car shows a year.
That's awesome.
There's a guy that I follow on Instagram that he's, like, a real deal vintage drag racing collectibles dealer, that he's, like, an agent for, like, Don Prudhomme and a couple other people, and he's actually been selling some of her old clothing and stuff on her account. So if you want to check his account out, Grancor, GRANCOR on Instagram, for a lot of old cool drag racing stuff. And if you're an old clothing collector, maybe you can get something there. Won't be cheap though, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. Damn, that's so cool. Was anyone else at that show besides Linda?
Yeah, but no one was paying attention to them. Poor Jody Ridley.
Oh,
oh man.
He was there.
I would have been psyched to meet him. Not that I know a lot about him, but still.
He was set up directly across from her, but he had, like, there's no signage, nothing. So he just looked like every other random old white dude there to see Linda Vaughn just sitting at a table by himself.
Nobody
so
was
unless,
lining up to kiss Jody Ridley.
No. I mean, I went and met him and got my picture made with him, but if you didn't know that was Jody Ridley, then you would have just walked right by him. I kind of felt bad for him, but yeah. Other than that, I think one of the guys from Shade Tree Mechanics was there. I don't know.
Yeah.
Linda was the star.
Yeah, always. There's no question about that, regardless of who else was there. But, man, that's awesome. I'm so glad you got to meet her. And, again, I would probably have stood in line to not get a kiss, but, you know.
Right, yeah. Just
awkwardly hide behind you and wave and sweat, you know.
Yeah, she was so sweet, yeah. I mean, you know, if you get a chance to meet your heroes, you know, they're getting older.
Yeah. You know, and I'm just glad to hear that it was a good experience, because oftentimes when you do meet your heroes, they're dickheads. So I'm glad to hear that Linda is who she is as advertised to be. And I don't think there's any question about that. Everyone kind of knows she's...
Right. I don't think you have a career as long as hers if you're not genuine.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's awesome.
Before we get to Darf, though, I do want to talk about SRX, because SRX, for the second week in a row, has been entertaining again. Finally, Paul Tracy getting some comeuppance for his absolute dog shit driving style that he's had the entire 3 years that he's been in the series, and getting at least temporarily kicked out.
Yeah, I can't imagine they're going to have him back.
No, thanks to Ken Schrader, of all people, who, you know, really doing the Lord's work.
Speaking his mind and
standing up for himself and standing up for the other competitors. Because
you piss off Ken Schrader, you've done something. Like, that's hard to do. But just Paul Tracy trying to describe that as hard racing, which is just, you know, kind of turning right into Joseph Newgarden and then wrecking himself into Schrader on the bottom lane. Like, Jesus Christ, man. Like,
there was absolute no humility, no even sliver of apology in that statement after that wreck. And yeah, Kenny was just like, I'm not racing with him again, that's it. And he doesn't have to, which is great. As much as I like Johnny Benson, I don't necessarily I feel like they probably could have gotten somebody a little more interesting.
He's literally the pace
the
car
cars.
driver.
Yeah.
He's but, already gonna be there.
that is true. But, I mean, Johnny, you know, again, he has been driving a bit, so it's not like he's unfamiliar with being behind the wheel. Personally, I would have loved to see Jeremy Mayfield get that spot, but who knows? Maybe the next week, you know, they'll put him in the car, or who knows? So that was interesting. I did, even though I can't say I was ever really much of a Clint Bowyer fan, I was pulling for Clint to win that race over Kyle Busch, and he almost did. He put on a good charge there at the end, but just couldn't pull it off. But it was good. I mean, it's definitely, you know, the first week wasn't all that entertaining, but the last two have. So Thursday Night Thunder has been working for me. Hopefully ESPN does some other stuff with that time slot after this series is over. I don't think they've really announced anything, but it would be great to see motorsports continue in that tradition, because it's nice to have something to watch Thursday nights. Again, usually we have full weekends of racing, but you know, Thursday nights, there's not a whole lot from the bigger series. So it'd be cool to keep that going.
Yeah. If I were Flow Racing and I worked at Flow Racing, and I would try and partner with ESPN to show some sort of highlight reel and like really do Thursday Night Thunder, because there is live stuff happening. You know, there are plenty of options that you could slide in there, but you know, a lot of the big stuff happens Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you know.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see somebody like that, or Dirt Vision, or another one of these streaming services that has a lot of you know, skin in the short track world, put together a show like that for cable television. Now, would anybody watch it? I don't know, but I would love to see actual Thursday Night Thunder come back, and that'd be a pretty easy way to do it. So that's free advice, you know, for the folks at Flow Racing as a stockholder or whatever the fuck I am by paying my.
Because don't you have an inside line to someone at Flow Racing? Put that little tidbit in their ear.
Yeah, I'll send some texts. You know, call ESPN and get on cable. How does that sound to you guys? The active enemy of cable television. Which, speaking of which, we haven't talked about this yet. Xfinity Series is going to be on CW. That's over-the-air television. Every fucking television with a piece of tinfoil hanging out the back of it. You, starting 2025, you'll be able to watch the NASCAR Busch Series live.
Which, you know, I think we kind of goofed on CW earlier in the year when mentioning the IndyCar Reality Series being there, but you know, yeah. I think NASCAR potentially being exposed to more households is never a bad thing. And I think with for as much as I know about television and, you know, airing rights and all that stuff that's been changing the last couple of years, CW, I mean, if live sports are what draws actual ratings to live TV. I mean, at this point, anybody can DVR anything, but live events, you know, most of the time you want to be able to actually watch them live. So CW, I think, is pivoting to that and really changing a lot of their programming lineup to a bunch of live sports. So this obviously fits in with that.
Yeah.
The one point that Denny made on his show was how that could affect the overall TV package in 2025 when it comes to, you know, the Money and Cup and the other series, because now there's one less component to that package. Although, I mean, it seems like in the past the TV deals have been different through all three series, so I don't know if it's necessarily a valid point, but
what
I'm
was
not
he saying
it
in a positive impact or was it a negative impact?
I think it was a little bit of a negative impact, not for the overall health of the sport, but maybe for the value of that TV package. But again, I just can't think of any time in the past where those TV contracts, I mean, you know, again, I don't necessarily pay a ton of attention in the past either, but I feel like all three series are shown on different networks, even though, you know, it's like FS1 and FS2 and that type of bullshit. But he might have a little bit of a point there, but you know, I think it'll be good for Xfinity and NASCAR in general to have that access. And again, it's free TV that airs across the entire country. You know, you don't need cable or any sort of streaming to be able to watch it. You just need, you know, that little bullshit antenna box thing that you can get for $5 anywhere now. So,
yeah,
it's good.
Every television in the United States that can actually get anything to watch on it.
and
plus streaming.
One final little update before we get to Darf's in the video of the week. Uncle Kenny had some really sad news over the weekend about our friend Jughead.
Yeah,
Jughead, if you're a follower of Kenny like we are, Jughead is his buddy who I don't know his total story, but he looks like kind of like Sloth and also kind of like that other weird guy from the 70s and 80s that I think it was a James Bond villain, just a strange looking character. Doesn't really talk much, but he's good friends with Kenny.
We called
him
Peanut earlier in the year.
He used to call him Peanut. So Kenny had an update over the weekend that kind of bummed us all out, where he mentioned Jughead wasn't doing too good. He was losing weight, and there was a race he was at where his breathing started to get real heavy, and he had to go to the hospital. Looking at Kenny's Twitter right now, and there's an update on Jughead. It says, after 7 bags of potassium... Quotes, it is still not enough. Potassium number up to 3.1. Slowly getting better. Frankie, that's his real name, I guess, has been in the hospital since Friday night. Told Jughead that he's been sick for a long time and he's right where he needs to be, and now he has so much good to look forward to and he's feeling better.
Good.
Went to see him yesterday. He looks better than ever. He was smiling and very happy. He was truly near death. I guess he had very low potassium. Jughead probably does not have wonderful eating habits, so you know, I guess that's not a total surprise.
I mean, him and Kenny are always rocking up to Ruby Tuesday at every chance they get, so.
Yeah. Said he was truly near death. Low potassium is very hard on your heart. We both talked about his new lifestyle moving forward. This will include the right foods that he needs to eat for his particular body, and of course the right medication. He has a good support system, and we're all popping in and out of his hospital room as the days go by. So that's a great positive update. You know, I know we were all thinking of Jughead when that update was
for
posted over the weekend. So glad to hear Jughead's doing better.
He seems like a real dog in the best way possible, you know, like just always there, always rolling with Kenny, always up in the mix, you know. You love to see it, but you hate to see, you know, someone like that fall ill. So you know, thoughts and prayers, all that to our boy Jughead. Hopefully I get to meet him someday. I'd love to meet that dude.
Yeah, so would I, for sure.
I'm glad he's getting better. That's awesome news.
Yeah, same.
Yep. But now on to the Darf of the Week, Rob.
Yeah, so we're going to take a couple steps back to SRX. There was a post, I think it was the actual SRX post, about Paul Tracy's suspension for being a moron at the Motor Mile. And a guy named Raw0406 says, this is on Instagram, by the way, bring SRX to Canada. They will never survive. Put some penny drivers in there, which... What are you gonna put fucking Alex Tagliani in there? Like, I'm sorry. Like, maybe if you would have mentioned some, like, you know, big block guys, maybe I would have been like, yeah, sure, I guess. But no, fuck the Penny series. It's fucking stupid. I know there's maybe a Canadian or two out there who might disagree, but I'm sorry. Like, you know, we're gonna send Andrew Ranger down here. Like, fuck that shit.
Listen, I posted
Canada
some
Canada does
cast
not
car
have
shirts.
Good stock car drivers, except for that new kid. Well, I can't remember what his name is anymore. It's the most French-Canadian shit I ever heard. He's whooping ass this year, but... Yeah,
there are definitely some Pinty's guys out there, because I posted some cast car shirts like a month ago, and they sold immediately, and people were very excited about them. So there are definitely Pinty's guys up there for sure.
Yeah, I'm just hating. I'm sure it's fine. And it's usually actually pretty fun races to watch, but yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not gonna hear that the the NASCAR Pinty series crew is this secret hotbed of just incredible talent.
That's true.
So well, that's my dart for the week. You can take a week off poutine and I don't know, let fucking Justin Trudeau come to your house and give you a kiss on the forehead or whatever the fuck it is that piss you off. So I don't fucking know.
All right.
I would hate that.
Okay, so
boy, have we got a video of the week for you guys.
We got a video of the week, and this is gonna be
buckle
this is
in, y'all.
Gonna be, yeah, this is
you
gonna be.
You thought last
thing.
Week was boring.
Listen, so we decided, or I decided to go in a different direction this week. Now, I will say there were a couple videos I offered to the crew here. One of them was the all wheels wrestling pilot for. So maybe at some point we'll watch this. But long story short, Hermie Sadler and the Sadler family have always been involved in pro wrestling on the side, and in the I think it was around 2010. And in the late 2000s, he was involved in TNA wrestling in Orlando, and they actually filmed a pilot for a wrestling-themed offshoot called All Wheels Wrestling, and it was really dog shit. Like, it's 15 minutes of promos from different drivers of different cars, including DW and Kenny Wallace, and then just some awful wrestling matches, so... I can understand nobody wanted to watch that, but the other options were two different episodes of the QVC For Race Fans Only program, which aired in the 90s, and we decided to go with the Jeff Gordon block from March of 1994. Now, this was actually filmed the day before St. Patrick's Day, so there are a lot of... St. Patrick's Day commercials throughout this show that I'm sure my mom bought some shit because my mom's entire house is green and covered in shamrocks, and throughout my childhood and adulthood Irish bullshit has been a part of it, so there's a good chance that this was even airing in my house that day. I don't remember watching, but Rob does. Rob actually did watch it when he was a little kid, and he didn't watch that much of it this time because it made him fall asleep.
Yeah,
but,
no, over the course of however 30 years or however long it's been, I'd say I've watched about 15 minutes of this from my childhood to now, so I'll let Brian handle this one, but I do remember watching this specifically. I did like Jeff Gordon a lot. You know, once Davey Allison died, I kind of didn't have a driver, and again, through like Thursday Night Thunder and TNN showing outlaw shows and sprint car shows, I kind of got into that side of racing a little bit more, and Jeff Gordon was, you know, a young guy who kind of came in, and he came from that world, so it was kind of cool to put the connect the dots and kind of put it together in my little child brain. And he also looked like a kid with a mustache. So that was all those things were helpful. And this was sort of at the very beginning of Jeff Gordon becoming a household entity, you know?
Yeah, that is probably, I would say, from someone who isn't like a collector like Ashley and I would say that's probably the most interesting stuff you're going to glean from this hour and a half video is this was filmed right on the cusp of Jeff blowing up. I mean, granted, in 93 he was already a star in the sport and already very popular, and he won the Busch Clash in 94 as well, but I mean, in 2 months he would win the 600, in 5 months he would win the Brickyard 400, and then he was off to the races.
It's definitely
interesting to see this hour and a half footage of him right before his life changed.
And this was a regular show on QVC as well. This isn't the only time it aired. Again, like Brian said, there's a few more that we are considering watching. But this one, you know, just...
I had to sit through both of them. Yeah.
Okay, I didn't make you do that, Ashley. I just gave you two options. All you had to do was you decided to watch both of them. That's your fault.
Well,
like,
well, although I'd already watched down, both. Hunker down and watch QVC anyway.
I needed to thoroughly investigate. The second one was Jeff Bodine, and I legitimately fell asleep during that one. But the reason I went with this Gordon one is the same reasons Rob mentioned. After Davey passed away, Gordon was the driver that I latched onto for like the next 10 years. So it was interesting, this being at the very beginning of his career, watching.
Yeah. And also just the footage. The fact that something like this could exist, because it's almost unfathomable now in the modern era of NASCAR or racing in general, that there be an entire, not just like a single 2-hour block or whatever it is, but like a series based on selling whatever the fuck with racing shit on it. We got watches, we got little biplanes that are painted like Jeff Gordon's car, you know. And well, Jeff Gordon wasn't a major star at that point. And it's really fascinating to sort of see this side of NASCAR merchandising before it sort of became what it is now. Well, again, when it was really in the public consciousness, it's like sort of the beginning of the height of the Winston Cup era, you know.
Yeah, we'll get into it, but I mean, the first inkling of the Gordon and Earnhardt rivalry you can actually see in this video. You know, again, we'll get to it, but Action Packed put out a series of cards called the Champ and the Kid or something like that, a Champ and the Challenger. But it was basically a series of cards that was just featuring Jeff and Dale Earnhardt. And that rivalry, it was just like, you know, rainbow versus black. Like, it was one of those things that it became very apparent as soon as Jeff started to make a name for himself in Cup. And, you know, as you can listen to on Dale Jr.'s podcast, when they talked about the merch stuff in the 90s, and really just knowing what I know about the industry, you know, in my career, quote unquote, as a merchandise reseller, you know, 94, 95 is really when this entire industry blew up. And Jeff and Dale deciding to market their rivalry, it blew up both of their career, blew up both of their wallets as far as selling.
And maybe I'm wrong about this, but didn't Dale Earnhardt actually sort of mentor Jeff Gordon?
Oh yeah, sort they
not
they
even
were,
behind
they,
the scenes.
Again,
they were in business
in cahoots. Yeah.
Yes, off track, they were 100% in cahoots. They were both like Dale was like, "We're gonna be rich, kid," and they worked. But in saying that, again, both Ashley and I, we are merchandise collectors and resellers. I would say percentage wise, I probably sell more than I keep, and Ashley's probably
the exact opposite.
Keep it all.
But we're both we're both very, very much into collecting old shit and some new shit. And I actually went the extra step here, a couple steps. Not only did I go through. Yes, the whole staircase. Not only did I go through, and as we were watching this clip, I converted what things cost in 94 to 2023 dollars, and I also went and found what these items are worth today. So
you
we'll
know,
get into
watching
that.
This, I kind of felt like this was something that you were going to do, so.
Well, you know, shocking, I did it. So I will say I wish there were more episodes of this show on YouTube, and I'm hopefully, you know, maybe somebody will dig some more up over the years, because I personally, again, it's not stuff I'm, you know, paying incredibly close attention to, but especially doing stuff around the house and having this shit on in the background, and when they switch items, I'll do the math and whatnot. I enjoy watching this stuff and seeing what they were offering back in the 90s. This episode, again, it should have been 2 hours. We missed the first 20 minutes or so, but everything that they were selling gets talked about at some point. And this clip starts off with a Jeff Gordon lithograph. Now, in the 90s, there were plenty of different artists, obviously Sam Bass being one of them. Jeannie Barnes was another one that I had some of her artwork as well. And, you know, there were a couple other guys. There's a piece by a guy named Bob Rector, and this is a pretty shitty painting when you look at it up close. I found this on eBay. We'll get into pricing in a second. I found it on eBay, and I got an up-close look, and Jeff looks like a burn victim. There's like a photo. There's obviously his car.
Hi.
And then there's a in the background you see his midget, and then
the
Jeff
twisted wreckage of his midget.
Yeah, Jeff looks like a burn victim, and there were about 1,000 of these made. They were selling this back then for $125, which in 2024 dollars is $260.87. You can go on eBay right now, and there is one of these up for auction. It's asking $80. There are zero bids on it. I'm sure if you offered them $40, they would take it, because after almost 30 years, someone still has this, and it is awful. So that's the first item that we see.
In the video, I thought he looked pretty tan in it, but hearing you say he looks like a burn victim up close makes sense.
Yeah.
Next up, we see a set of action-packed trading cards. Now, a couple things about these cards. Action-packed was a card producer that didn't do baseball cards. They did NASCAR, football, and I think hockey, and maybe one or two other sports. They did wrestling as well. The gimmick with the action-packed cards were they were, quote-unquote, 3D cards. They were kind of embossed, glossy cards that didn't have sharp edges. They had rounded edges, so they were a little more of a durable card. And I guess if you're a card person, that's your thing. I mean, they were way different than anything else on the market at the time. They were pretty popular.
I never really
in
got
the 90s.
Into collecting cards.
I did. I had these, and I had this exact set as a kid. Now,
you were shoplifting them from Kmart.
There it is. Yeah.
No, well, yeah. as mentioned on the show, Action Packed did not sell these as a set to the public. The only place you could get them as a set was on QVC, apparently. This particular package not only came with the entire 94 Action Packed set, it came with a couple of prototype cards, and it came with an uncut sheet of those Dale and Jeff cards that I mentioned earlier. A couple other things I'll mention about these cards. If you bought the wax packs, they had a couple different inserts. There were what they called 24 karat gold leaf cards, which are kind of, you know, a fancier, just like a parallel of the base cards. And then also a Kyle Petty card that had a cubic zirconia diamond earring embedded into it, which I actually have one. They were very rare back then, but I think there were like 1,000 of them made, so I think I got it last year for $15. So if you want it, it's not that hard to get out there. These cards were, it was $63.64. They were on sale, which equates to $132.81. Now, these cards are worthless. You can get that entire set right now on eBay for like less than $20. You know, compared to some of the others, Max was the big card producer in the 90s.
Yeah.
They were the first NASCAR specific cards that were made. There was also Trax, there was Pro Set, there were a couple other companies that made them. Action Pack came along a little bit later, and cool, but really not worth a thing.
Yeah, Loy Allen leaning against a motorcycle is a highlight of that section. I didn't
yes,
make it that
they
far.
Do mention that there is a rookie, that all the rookies they had pose on motorcycles, which that's like a subset of the series. Next up, they have what is called the nameplate hat, which I've got one of these in my collection featuring Ernie Irvin. But basically, these are just black and red hats that have like the driver's name and the logos embroidered on the side. And Jeff makes up some bullshit about how he loves the hat design and how they're more comfortable and softer than other hats that he has. They had a variety of different drivers to offer here. They were selling for $17.75, which equates to $37.04, which isn't that bad, especially if you go to a race now. Every hat you're going to get at any driver's trailer is going to be $30 to $40, so pretty standard. And these hats
is the
also
going rate these days for
yeah
sure.
Which I've bought a couple. I personally like the New Era style hat, so I'll get those if I see a cool one. And if it, on the collector's market, like you can find in my store, you know, around $30 is about what you'd pay for them now. So not the worst investment you could make on this show. You see some models showing off the hats, awkwardly standing there, and they're wearing t-shirts, which we'll get to later on in the program. Next up, there is a Brickyard 400 hat and shirt set. Now, I would say, out of all the races that have ever been run in the last 50 years, there is not one single race that had more merchandise produced for it than the 1994 Brickyard 400. I would say any flea market you go to, eBay, Depop, anywhere, there is Brickyard 400 shit from 94, like, just for sale. I probably have four or five shirts that I plan on listing next week, and every single year I always collect, you know, I round them all up and just list them.
Yeah, I got an inaugural one that my dad brought me from Indianapolis when he was there on business from the airport. So, yeah, they printed a shit ton of that stuff.
Yeah, just you know, absolutely insane amount of shit. And the t-shirt itself isn't too bad. It's basically it's got a pocket print with the Brickyard 400 logo on the back. And then I will give him credit. It is a track-specific design with the bricks on it and stuff on the back. Hate back prints, but it's not the worst shirt in the world. The hat is total dog shit. Awful, awful quality. The set was $31, which is $64.69 in today's dollars. And I will sell you a better hat and shirt combo right now for maybe $40 shipped if you want it. Just look at my store next week. Since we're in Indy, I will have
this,
a bunch of
bricks. This is the whole point of this thing. Brian Holmes
this
shopping.
Isn't just an ad now. This isn't just an ad for my
number?
Store. No, we do not.
1-800 Speedway Screens, please.
Yeah. We are past.
Give them the discount code, Rob.
Yeah, tell them True Love and Rob sent you.
There you go. Next up, there is a Jeff Gordon DuPont flag, which it's a nice flag. It's whatever. They later on in the show when they talk about the flag again, they say this is a bigger than average flag. I guess it was. An extra square foot, like 3.5 by 4.5 foot flag, sells for $29.25, which is $61.04, which is an insane amount of money to spend on a flag. I feel like you can go to any driver's trailer now and get a flag for $20. Old flags, $15 to $30, depending on the driver condition.
I bought a Kyle Larson flag for $15 recently, so yeah, it can be done.
Yeah. Later on in the show, the host is starting to get tired. He starts flubbing a bunch of lines. He calls this flag made out of Condura, which is not the name of the fabric. It's called Cordura. It is a type of, like, ripstop vinyl nylon fabric type
Condura.
Deal. It's a little bit stronger. But whatever.
He's sleepy.
Yeah, like everybody else watching the show at this point.
He put himself to sleep.
he seemed pretty excited to be hanging out with Jeff. Now, next up is the only diecast that we see on the show. Not cars, though. There is a diecast Chevy Suburban and a diecast like World War II prop plane, both painted up like Jeff's car, obviously. These were about, I think they're like 1/24th scale, roughly. These were going for $41.50, which is $86.61. Now, folks, I'll let you both take a guess as to what these sell for in 2023.
It depends on the flea market, I guess.
Yeah.
That is true, but we are going by eBay prices. Take a guess as to what they sell for.
Which one, the plane?
The gypsy
both.
Tents.
Either one.
I don't know, man. I could see it either being
$15.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with. I'm gonna go high. I'm gonna go $200.
Yeah, $200. Now Ashley was right on the money. The Suburban goes for about $10 to $15 now, and the plane goes for around $20 or so. So
that's another reason that I.
Go ahead.
Well, that's another reason that I picked this Gordon one over the Bodine one, because the Bodine one was like all diecast, and this Gordon one had a wide variety of merch.
Was Jeff selling any of his girlfriend's salsa at that point on the show?
Cases
of Tanya Tucker's.
There was a logo on the car behind him, but he wasn't selling.
It's funny.
Cases for
funny that you mentioned that. Literally before we got on the air, I got a bunch of the shit that I bought on online last week. I bought a bunch of old hats. In the pile of hats was a Tanya Tucker's hot sauce or it's Tiny Tucker Salsa Jeff Bonine hat. It says Tanya on the back. Like, the whole back of the hat just says Tanya.
That's sick. I love
that. I'm
keeping
that one, though.
Yeah. You have to model it for us later.
I might. Let's
1-800 Speedway Screens.
Like I said, not for sale. That's one I'm keeping.
Call it up.
Because I have a matching t-shirt to go with it. Next up.
Model that too. What? You're holding out on us.
Take a little spin, you know. Walk up the runway
Today I modeled a Taco Bell foam hat on my other social media accounts. I'll send you guys that photo. It is ridiculous. Next up, a little bit of an interview tidbit that I found interesting, at least, you know, from a novice fan's perspective. Jeff talks about DuPont and how good of a sponsor they are, and he kind of talks about how in NASCAR, especially in this point in the 90s, most of the sponsors on the cars were more consumer goods as opposed to DuPont, which was something that was sold to repair shops. Something that the average consumer wouldn't necessarily think about when getting their car fixed, but the shops and stuff, you know, they would. And, you know, I guess the importance of marketing, even back then, you know, with a brand like DuPont, you're getting guys from mechanics to come out to races and meet the driver and go in the pits and all that stuff. And it's kind of the importance of marketing, not just to the fans, but,
right.
you know, race activation, whatever you want to fucking call it.
Yeah.
So I thought that was an interesting little tidbit. Where are we next here? Sorry, I lost my spot in my 4,000 words of notes here. We get a commercial break, our first commercial break in the show, and there's an ad for Blue Blocker sunglasses where you can win a Dodge Viper. And then the as Rob mentioned earlier, the aforementioned Craftsman Tool ads, which is... Again, weird to think about selling tools on a shop at home TV show, but again, I guess for
Christmas
weirdos
gift
who want
yeah.
Yeah, stuff, you know, test it out for them and give an example how to use it.
Buy Papa a wrench for his birthday off QVC. That's what it's for.
I'm sure there were plenty of old guys that had nothing going on. And like, well, there's no sports or no fishing or nothing. Let's watch guys use tools for 2 hours. Yeah. So,
my grandparents were addicted to QVC. Same. Every time I went to their house, it was all that was on the entire time. Boxes of QVC stuff coming in constantly. Every Christmas present I ever got from them was off from QVC.
Yeah, I got a lot of QVC shit back in the day, that's for sure.
Yeah, I do think I got a good portion of that stuff as well. A lot of catalog stuff too, because even like JCPenney and Sears and shit, they had NASCAR stuff when we were kids.
They did.
The Christmas catalog from JCPenney was always supreme.
By the way, I'm going to put this out there into the world since we're talking about merch. If anyone out there sees that 1996 Indianapolis 500 Micro Machines set, all 33 cars on the grid for a decent price, holler at your boy. Hit us up in the DMs. Yeah. Send us a message. I lost that shit when I moved, and I'm so sad about it. It was the coolest fucking thing. It was the worst collection of 33 drivers you've ever seen, but it was so damn cool, and I want it in my bar. So there you go. Anyway, good back to the program.
Next up, we get another action-packed card, but this time it is a big-ass, like, I think it's like 10.5 by 8.5 card. These were $1,770, which was $3,694. Apparently, they're $2,500 made. I could not find an example of this Jeff Gordon one, but I did find a Rusty Wallace one that was actually autographed on eBay and was only $12. Much like their regular size action pack cards, these things are worthless unless they were autographed and slabbed. So like, yeah, you maybe spend $100 or so on a Dale or a Jeff, but you know, the 24 carats and all the other ones, worthless. Just worthless. Next up, we get a there's a couple different fans that call in. The first one being a woman from Indiana that calls in. Both fans of NASCAR. Her husband actually races at South Bend. Big Gordon fans. They go to Michigan every year. They love his car. Predict big things. He asks them if they're going to Indy. They stupidly say no. They're like, we're more comfortable at Michigan.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
Poor choice. Very poor choice if you're such big Gordon fans, as we learned a few months later.
next she was up, dead set on never going anywhere but Michigan.
Yeah, that's so weird. I mean, granted, I can kind of understand, you know, I'm sure that race was sold out. I'm sure tickets were hard to get. So, you know, even though you're in Indy or in Indiana, I can
suggest that. Yeah,
it's, you know, their loss. They big missed opportunity for Gordon fans. Now, next up is a another flea market standby. The autographed 8x10 on a shitty fake marble plaque. These had to have been high margin for QVC because these were exclusively produced for QVC. Jeff signed 1,024 of them, and they were $52.96, which was $110.52. And again, maybe not signed, but you can go to any flea market in the country and buy one of these for less than $10. If you want it signed, maybe it'll be $20 or $30. But yeah, just, you know, just
hideous this is, too. That marbled was just gross. Oh,
God. No, this was exclusive. They chose that color because they wanted gross. To. Yeah. just awful. We get another action-packed item, another one signed by Jeff. Another, it was a big jumbo card, and then a promo card of the same photo of Jeff in his helmet sitting in his car. That's $50, $104.35. This was another one I couldn't find any examples of, so maybe this is one of the few items that was actually worth the money to hold on to, but probably not. And then from here, we get a half-scale Simpson helmet. Now, these aren't hard to find at all. You know, you can go on eBay right now and find one for $40. The way it was $52.50 then, which was $109.56 in 2023 money. The selling point for this one is the stupid 1993 Rookie of the Year visor sticker that made it different than the other ones on the market. So if you really need that fucking sticker, good luck finding it, but you can go find one without it for $40.
Hell yeah.
Then the host asked Jeff about why he went with NASCAR over IndyCars. And, you know, Jeff gives a pretty middle-of-the-road answer that he pretty much took whatever opportunity that he had, and there wasn't really a good IndyCar option. He does mention driving a truck for Toyota, like a trophy truck. And that's interesting. I that's something I don't think I remember hearing anywhere. And he said he hated it, so... it would have been a waste of his talent to end up in those anyways. Another waste is the money that you'd be spending on this weird Jeff Gordon leather jacket that, like, is just awful looking. I don't know who made this. They didn't really give too many details. But it's, like, got two different colored sleeves and they only show a logo on the front. I'm assuming there's some sort of logo on the back. And it's a weird cut. It's not cool. It's nothing about it is appealing to me at all, even as a vintage collector guy. $325. You had your choice of Mark Martin or Jeff Gordon. That is $678.25 in 2023 money. Fucking insane.
Oh my God.
Absolutely insane.
QVC was making a killing.
Oh yeah. Jesus. They easily made six figures on this 2-hour broadcast, no doubt about it.
Murphy. So what not to cut you off here, but like,
yep.
Do you have a favorite and a least favorite item on the show? Or are we getting to that?
Like, we'll save that till the end because we're still more. We haven't gotten through the whole list yet. We'll say we can choose our items. Although you guys can only go by my description since you both fell asleep watching it.
I'm gonna fix myself another drink here.
they do show a Taz. NASCAR branded tee, which it was $16.08, since $33.56 in today dollars. I actually had this shirt in my store within the last 3 months, and that's comparable to today's prices. Here's yet another flea market item: a Sam Bass clock with. Apparently, Jeff was the first driver to get his own Sam Bass. Artwork lithograph in his rookie year, and this is that specific painting. $75 roughly $156.52. You can get these on eBay for about $100. Realistically, they sell for like $50 to $75. Again, every single flea market in the country, you can go find these clocks. They are dog shit. I have two in my house right now. One is a Davy Allison with a broken clock, and then I have an Ernie Irvin on my wall right now, and the clock does not keep accurate time. So, great value there. They mentioned the Sandwich Construction Company a few times in the show, which again was an infamous 90s restaurant in Charlotte that was covered in old racing shit and pieces of cars and stuff. Always cool to hear that mentioned. We get another fan phone call, and I enjoy this call. It was Freddie from Fishkill, New York. Very much a New York, New Jersey accent on this guy. If he said Ronkonkoma instead of Fishkill, I wouldn't have been shocked at all. He just called in to congratulate Jeff on the Rookie of the Year honors, and he said that last year he was doing the fast track driving school at Charlotte, and Jeff happened to be there testing, and he came over and talked to him and the other guys doing the class, and said Jeff was really nice, and
that's cool.
It's a really nice moment. Again, probably one of those moments that, you know, stopped happening very shortly after this was filmed. Just a nice call. More jackets. These are some very boring varsity jackets, just with, like, you know, two-tone with the logos on the front and the back. Nothing fancy.
Yeah, nothing.
These aren't
special,
the driver's.
Yeah,
they're not the driver's suit jackets. They're not real flashy. $100 for these, which was $208.69. If I found these today and put them in my store, $50 is the most I would charge for them. They're pretty boring, and nobody would actually keep these things, so can't find any on the market, but if you do see them out there, I'm sure you'd probably pay about $50 now. There's a QVC ad for a lucky number machine, which is, I guess, a promo that they would do to keep people watching throughout the day. I guess every hour they would pick four numbers, kind of like Lotto, and if the four numbers were either the first four or the last four of your QVC membership number, you got $10 in your account, and then you got entered into the daily $1,000 sweepstakes. Oh. So another gimmick to keep people watching and paying attention.
Is this something you're going to incorporate into your business model?
Oh, God, no.
1-800 Speedway Screens.
I don't want anything to do with
that. Everyone gets their own special number. You get one of those little bingo roller things.
No. Nope.
Okay,
never.
Fine.
Not doing it. There's the first of many Irish 24-hour marathons. Again, St. Patrick's Day is the day after this taping. I'm sure my mom had that on in our household. There's an ad for Butler Accent Furniture. Whatever the fuck that is. Some English bullshit for sure. Just I could tell from the commercial. And then a 1 a.m. John Lennon memorabilia show, which who knows what they were selling there.
1 a.m. On a Monday. I was like,
yeah, you know, real collector's hours.
Yeah.
Let's see here. And then finally, oh, actually, hold on. We don't get to the good stuff yet. Moon mugs. These nice. Are gimmicky plastic fill or plastic mugs with this non-toxic liquid in there. You're supposed to keep them in the fridge or keep them in the freezer to keep your drinks cold. Again, these featured a host of drivers, pretty boring. They were $17.75, which is $37.04. Again, any flea market in the country, $5 max if you really want to drink out of a 30-year-old plastic mug. They're out there.
Yeah, like I do. Thank you.
There is a another call, and this is just a fan asking about how to prep for Sonoma, which I guess was the weekend after this was filmed. Jeff said he actually tested at Charlotte quite a bit, and this would have been obviously way before the Rover ever existed, but he said they apparently it was all left-hand turns, and he would do the court, which doesn't make any fucking sense to me.
Yeah,
how that
I was kind of confused by that.
He would do it one way and then turn around and race the track backwards. Very weird. But there is, like he explains, yeah, probably some
I think
bullshit.
He was confused.
He's so tired of being, so being tired. QVC at fucking 3 in the morning.
There's some Jericho transmission talk, which I got a kick out of anytime they talk about that. And then the caller starts stuttering, which I thought was funny. Finally, we get to some t-shirts, though, and these are some things that I have had both of these two t-shirts. They only had Dale Jarrett and Jeff for up for grabs. I think I have the Dale Jarrett shirt in my about to be listed closet right now, and I've had the Jeff one many times. These went for $29.25, which was about $61 in today's dollars, and actually even kind of a bargain because all over prints, I mean, the last couple years have really blown up. Both in popularity and in price. I've definitely sold the Gordon one for $80-$90. I've sold that one, and then the Dale one will probably go for around that price. They do talk about the printing process, which is actually something I was always confused about and only recently learned how it works when we were hanging out with Ryan Williams in North Wilkesboro a few months ago. Those old AOPs, if you look at them closely, like what they did was print on the sleeves and then each side of the shirt, and then they sewed them together, which is why they kind of had a little bit of an inconsistent look to them. Like some of them were kind of printed more oddly than others, and also why some of them maybe fit differently than others as well. They show that plaque again, and Jeff mentions Dale's potential 7th title, which, you know, another premonition to the future. He probably would have never gotten it had Ernie not had his wreck, but that's another story. Let's see. Jeff, some talking about being patient in the car and learning patience over the last year or so. Again, really pushing this plaque. They probably spent 15, 20 minutes just on this plaque alone.
Way
again, high margin
ugly
item.
Ass plaque.
Yeah. High margin item, they had 1,000 of, so they really had to get those things out there.
Yeah.
Another St. Patrick's Day ad with some jewelry and a sweater. Then we see some, they call them Floridian timepieces, aka watches. Very boring looking watches that have like the driver's car and then their signature, and just a shitty watch that was going for $66.75. $139.30. I could not find this exact watch featuring any of the drivers on eBay, but I'm willing to bet $10 in any flea market if you find them.
I've definitely seen a couple of those in a flea market before.
Yeah. I don't think there's really any nicely made watches out there. Maybe there's a Rolex or something out there, but I mean, who the fuck cares? It's 2023. Nobody's wearing watches anymore. The host asked Jeff if he has any – does he notice that he has a lot of female fans? Because, you know, again, he did. And he gave a very gibberish answer, trying not to – being that he was newly engaged at the time, I'm sure he didn't want to piss off Brooke, which, you know, I'm sure he did at
he
some point
did.
Because
yeah. –
yeah, he eventually did. But I'm sure he didn't want to.
Maybe
he
could have saved us some money if he would have, you know, been honest. Yeah. Back on QVC.
then the guy compares Jeff potentially to Dale and Davey as far as his driving style goes, which I don't think I'd classify Jeff's driving style as either one of those two. Maybe I guess Davey over Dale because he
closer.
Jeff
closer, yeah. Not
yeah,
Dale.
Jeff was never really that aggressive of a driver. Neither was Davey. I mean, they both had their moments, but nothing compared to Dale. More interview stuff. Jeff briefly mentions racing BMX bikes as a kid before getting into racing cars, which as a BMXer, I got a kick out of that. They're doing a recap of some of the different items they talked about earlier in the show, and for scale they put the jumbo action pack cards next to a hubcap, like literally a fucking hubcap of a car, so you get an idea of how big they actually are. Then they draw the $1,000 shopping spree winner, and the winner was from Worcester, Massachusetts.
Oh.
Now Rob, if you'd actually watched it, you probably would have gotten a kick out of that like I did.
Nah, no one can say it right.
Yeah, well, it took me a while too.
There's no H.
Yeah.
No H.
Then there is a Lexan Jeff Gordon, like the side profile of his car. This was selling for $120, which is $250.43. This is an item that I don't see as many of the Luminas as I do the Monte Carlos, but I see these from all sorts of drivers. These are $50 all day now. I actually just had one in my antique mall of Jeff's that I sold for $50.
Oh,
so
where is that antique mall again?
That antique mall is at the Medina Antique Mall in Medina, Ohio, right off I-71. If we're traveling out of Cleveland towards Columbus, it's right there.
There you go.
Anyways, back to the recap of all the different shit.
We're gonna sell, buddy. Come on.
Yep. There's a dumb ad for some stupid Irish cape that they were selling. Like, literally, they called it a cape. And then the final new item is a fan pack, which featured a 3-inch button, a plastic mug with a die-cast car in it, which, again, one of those stupid 90s items that is trash, like just actual trash. And then there's a calendar, 1994 calendar. Take note that it is already March, and by the time you would receive these calendars, it would be April, so already a third of the year. Yeah, completely worthless. This went for 22. No, this was maybe because they were selling them together. The fan pack itself was $22.25, which is $46.43. Obviously, the calendar's worthless. The button is a 50-cent button, and those mugs, if you really want them, $5 to $10 all day long. And really, then the end of the show, Jeff talks about his engagement to Brooke, and because I guess in the calendar itself, there's photos of them in Victory Lane before they'd been dating, or at least maybe then when they were secretly dating. I don't know the exact timeline of that, but that's basically it. There's another
1993. Yeah, she was Miss Winston. Winston, so she was in a lot of Victory Lane photos.
So yeah, that basically is the end of the show. They wrap up the items again, congratulate him on his engagement, and that is your for race fans only broadcast. Now, again, going by my item of the show, I mean, the obvious answer for me are the T-shirts. Other than that, I guess the wall hanger sign, just because those have those resell pretty easy. So those are my answers as far as your best bets or best purchases if you're going and trying to collect these things. I don't know if you guys have anything to say, but yeah, that was a show.
Yeah, that was quite the video of the week. Seriously though, I really did enjoy it. I think that's a perfect selection for this show and the weird shit we talk about, because it's certainly a piece of racing weirdness.
Yeah. I mean, this is the type of stuff I do want to find more of. I mean, I enjoy watching race broadcasts and random stuff, but I really get more of a kick out of the more obscure stuff that, again, no, there's not going to be any sort of Fox or NBC or any ESPN films. Nobody's going to go through and show you footage of this shit. You got to go on YouTube and find it for yourself, or dig through VHS tapes and upload
and
this stuff.
It's out there.
It is out there. Because there were people that filmed anything that had to do with their favorite driver or NASCAR in general back then. But now that they're dying, it's up to people like me and Ashley to go and find it and show it to you guys.
That's
so
right.
That's what we're trying to do.
Yep, Speedway Screens, folks. You can buy all your NASCAR stuff there. As and True Love's got a store too, which she never talks about, so we don't have to mention that if you don't want.
Because I keep all my stuff.
Because she keeps all of it. But yeah,
you can't
call
keep
Brian.
All.
Call Brian at his 800 number again. It's 1-800 Speedway Screens. That's 1-800-773-3929-727-3367. Again, 1-800-773-3929-727-3367. Yep.
17 numbers.
Tell him Uncle Rob sent you ass.
Yeah. The timer in the corner is clicking down, too, so you guys got to get those calls in quick before.
That's true. Before he jacks the price up.
I've only got 700 of these Jeff Gordon lighters. Somebody's got to buy them.
Yeah, that's actually that's why we're talking about this, because he bought all this stuff as a kid and he's trying to claw his way out of debt. So please support Brian in his time of need, and I'll read the phone number off in a little bit if we have to again. But yeah, Brian would love to hear from you. So.
And And with that, that wraps up this week's trip to Applebee's.
You're going to Michigan, though, right?
I am going to Michigan next week, or next week, Sunday, rather. Not going on Saturday, just going up Sunday. My buddy Greg, who is in our fantasy league under the name of Flavortown McLeod, he's going to be driving out from Wisconsin to check out the race with me. I'm very excited. He and I, every couple years, go to races together, and it's always a great time. And I believe our listener Dylan, my buddy from Toledo, the go-kart racer, I think he's going to be out there too as well, hanging out. So, you know, if for some reason you want to say hi to me, feel free to DM us on one of the apps or DM me at Speedway Screens, and I'm happy to say hi and have a beer with you at the track.
Yeah, hit him up ahead of time so he could bring you one of those Jeff Gordon lighters.
Yeah, if you want to buy anything from me, I'm happy to deliver to the track. Just give me a shout. Save you some shipping. Save us both some shipping. But yeah, that'll be it for this show. Next week we'll have that to talk about. And what about you guys? You doing any racing stuff this weekend?
Not really. My wife's birthday is being celebrated this weekend. Unfortunately, she's got like a Monday birthday this year, so that sucks for her. But we're gonna hang out this weekend and have a good time. I'm probably gonna watch the Outlaws on Friday and Saturday night as well. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of big World of Outlaw late model shows happening too. Lucas Oil is off this week, and there's a whole shit ton of stuff on Flow if you're sitting at home watching. And of course, Michigan. But I'm just kind of saving my energy for the Knoxville Nationals next week, which I'm not going to, but I'll be watching every night, and I'll be like my saturation IndyCar coverage. I'll be talking about that pretty much exclusively next week's show.
Spoiler alert, folks, if you want some Knoxville merch, I might have some that'll be listed soon. So
there you go.
Keep checking that store out, which you can find
and
at
Home
Speedway
Shopping Network. Never.
Yes. Exactly. Listen.
1-800-773-3329 727-3367. That's the Speedway Screens hotline.
I can't go to these races. Gas money's got to come from somewhere, folks. So you got to buy this shit so I can go to these races. But and you can find all my stuff at Speedway Screens. Speedway Screens on all the things. SpeedwayTSJ.etsy.com. And of course, obviously, you can follow us on Instagram at Meet Me at Applebee's on IG, and Meet Me at DeBee's on Twitter. And here's True Love to give her piss poor plug of her shop.
Yikes.
Yep. It's still snakemountain_truelove. I keep all the good stuff. I'm not selling you anything. But, you know, there's some pictures of me and Linda Vaughn over on Instagram if you want to look at her.
They are worth the price of admission. I'd love to see it again. I'm so happy you got to meet her. That's cool shit. Yeah, I'm Rob. I'm on the internet too. I don't post shit. RobMoats_unofficial on Instagram and Twitter, or X, or whatever the fuck it's called now. And then These Wild Plains is my band. Got a few more show announcements coming up soon. We will be going down to Charlotte, Richmond, sort of mid-Atlantic, mid-South kind of thing going on in the fall.
Charlotte.
When are you going to play the Midwest?
You know, we haven't really turned the van in that direction in a long time. We've done that before.
If you come within 2 or 3 hours of me, I'll come hang out. You know?
It's just our market. We just play in the South. That's kind of how it works. And we don't even play in New England, to be honest with you. We just head on down South. And one of these days we'll make it out that way. And for sure, you'll hear about it on the show.
Okay.
And because I'd love to go out there. The Midwest is great. We played there a few times and actually got to hit up a couple racetracks the last time we were really out there. WIR being one of them, which, by the way, if you're listening to this, you're missing a great ASA show right now over on Flow Racing. So, but yeah, all that.
Cool. All right, folks. Well, thank you again for joining us at Applebee's one more time, and we will talk to you next week.